You've heard me talk about Morning Kick, used by former karate champion Chuck Norris. It's a daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes similar to strawberry lemonade, and I enjoy it. I know I don't eat as many vegetables as I should, but Morning Kick has helped me make up for that, and I feel great. I have more energy and better digestion. It's an easy part of my morning routine. My wife started taking it as well. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Harris for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Harris today. We're live now on the Conversations That Matter podcast. Some people are telling me in the chat, I haven't even said a word yet, and people are saying that YouTube is already... for those streaming on YouTube, flagging this video for misinformation. So I'm not sure what that would be about. Maybe a certain virus that could be, which I don't really plan to get into details on, but I guess it was in one of my tags or something. And so they've decided they're going to preemptively warn all of you. Well, welcome to, I guess, a very dangerous podcast with views that you're not supposed to hear, according to YouTube. We'll get through it, though. We will survive. And we're in this together, right? We heard that for years. And I still believe it. I still believe that we're in this together. So anyway, this is a little bit of an informal podcast. I did not announce this. I was just thinking about the fact that I only did one podcast so far this week. And there's a reason for that. I've been pretty busy with a bunch of things, some medical things, and then and don't worry, I'm okay. Everyone's okay. There's no problems that are life threatening or anything like that. But I've spent some time this week on the road and in doctor's offices. And the time I did have to be at home, I wanted to spend really thinking about some speeches that I'm going to be giving. And one of them, I mean, you could say I got carried away, but I think it's important. I've been researching classical liberalism and trying to understand it better and brushing up on this week. I was reading some old philosophers like John Locke and Enlightenment philosophers, really, Thomas Hobbes, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, and trying to understand what changes took place, what transitioned us from a more medieval society, a more Christian civilization, really, to the society that we exist in today. And this is, of course, something I had opinions on before last week, but I think that I'm gaining a better grasp of how secularization took place and what its implications are and how that's affected us deeply, very deeply, in ways that are surprising. So I'm writing right now a speech to give at the Jesus and Politics Conference, which I'll have more information for you on not too long. I've not really said much about it because the retreat, or the men's conference, I should say, is right around the corner. It's actually next week. And so I'm going to be giving a speech there as well. But this is literally your last chance. Like, if you want to come to the men's conference, October 21st through the 24th in Speculator, New York, like later today, I am sending in the rooming lists and letting them know how many people were coming and all of that. We're arranging the schedule. So you have to do it like now. You can email me. Probably the best way to contact me would be info@truthscript.com. It'll make its way to me if you have any questions, but this is the last chance. So anyway, I did let people know that I'm going to take questions today. Any questions you have? But let me just finish up real quick, the classical liberal thing. So I've been looking into this and you know, basically this kind of notion, I suppose, that we ought to have neutral societies that protect someone's right to choose, because that is the primary, I would say the individual is the primary building block of society, not really the family, the individual. And the power of the individual to choose and give consent is what gives any validity to human associations, including civil government. And so that idea, I think, has made its way very, very deep, and it is ideological, and it does lead to some of the same things that we saw actually in Soviet countries through a different route. It's not entirely the same. I'm not saying they're exactly parallel, but they both come from this root of Enlightenment rationalism, and they do lead to, ironically, this is the weird part, right? Valuing individual freedom actually leads to bigger government. And I have to define that carefully. It's not individual freedom in the sense that individuals are endowed with certain rights. I do think that is the case. And that was part of the pre-existing understanding that Christians had before the Enlightenment, that there were certain things that were within the jurisdiction of individuals, but they were attached to responsibilities, as they had responsibilities before God to do the good. And of course, now, though, that has been twisted to take away the element of responsibility, and it's really just individuals can do anything. They can pursue any vice, and as long as it's on a personal level, then it's perfectly fine. And I uncovered today, I was looking at a number of people. If I told you their names, you would recognize them. I don't want to give away the speech, but big conservative names and some evangelical names that said things that, frankly, if you listen to them, they're shocking that they would say them, but they come to conclusions about allowing certain moral evils and maybe even defending them and their free exercise of them, at least, because they value this neutral public square. And so has that been successful? That's the question. I don't even think consent can save kids from groomers at this point. I mean, I think it's been a failed project for the most part. So I'll take a few questions before I get into really... I have two or three topics, depending on how much time we have, that we can talk about today regarding the Evangelical Free Church, regarding the Southern Baptist Convention. And then I was going to show you, if you haven't seen already, there's a little video that Apple just put out there that I think is funny in a way. It's sad. It's scary in a way, too. But it's interesting. So let me take some questions, though. We have Scott Crawford saying, can you speak to why the G3 guys are still going after Stephen Wolf and Matthew Fletcher? What's G3? Okay. So I have two questions. G3 is a ministry. It's an organization designed or with a mission of assisting local churches. And hopefully I'm not getting anything wrong in that. I'm being general enough, hopefully, to encapsulate all of the things that they do. And they would claim to be Reformed. I think they're Baptist, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not saying they don't have Presbyterians ever speak there or Anglicans. I don't think they do, though. I think it is primarily Baptist. But be that as it may, I'll answer Scott's question, sort of. I think there's going to be more conversations about this next week for everyone who's listening. There has been attempts made through back channels to rectify, at least get conversations going to maybe solve this issue. And all I can say at this point is that so far, I don't think any of these attempts have been successful. And we're going on now a few months, really. And because of that, I think that some things are going to be, I think there's implications to that. I think that when you have a strained relationship, think about it on a personal level. Let's say you have a strained relationship and someone who you would consider to be a friend, and perhaps they're a Christian as well. Like you consider them a brother or sister in Christ, but they keep misrepresenting you, or they keep saying things that, you know, aren't true or malicious or, you know, whatever the case may be. And they have a public platform. They're broadcasting this publicly, let's say, and they're saying this about you, and you try to come to them, as a friend, and then their reaction is that they don't want to treat you, though, in that way. And the relationship you thought you had isn't really the relationship that they think that you have with them. And I think that that's everyone has situations like that in their lives. I view this in a similar fashion, right? If you can kind of get all the static out of the way, and anon accounts that say things and that are sometimes a little off the wall, or I don't know, some of the more ridiculous and silly arguments, because so many of them have been silly in this whole, I guess I would frame it as a G3 versed proto, it's not even Christian nationalists, proto-Christian nationalists. It includes people that don't even take the label. I would say that if you try to take those things away, at the end of the day, what you seem to have is a hesitation, and that's a mild term, probably more likely would be an unwillingness to really approach this whole disagreement on an equal footing, on a footing where you're both viewing the other party as brothers and sisters in Christ, where with the intention of working out differences or at least clarifying disagreements. And since these things have been made public, letting the public know where these disagreements are. So iron can sharpen iron. That has failed, in my opinion. And I think the time is very short. The G3 conference is what, the end of next week? I think time is very short, because, you know, if they do have, which I'm assuming they're going to, they have a pre-conference that's, I guess, going to be addressing some of these things. If they do say some of the things that many are thinking they're going to say, I think that the damage at that point is just permanent. So if any of you, I mean, last ditch efforts, if any of you know anyone that works for G3, and I'm talking about specifically people like Josh Bice, Scott O'Neill, people I've reached out to, Virgil Walker, I would say Owen Strand too. I mean, he speaks for them, and he's definitely been part of this. I would, any of those guys, you know, if you're close to any of them, I would just plead with them at this point to try to, I guess, offer an olive branch of some kind to at least let the other side know that there is a humility there that wants to understand what the objections and misunderstandings are. And that's really all I have to say about that for now. I know that's a whole minefield to get into, but you know, some other questions. Let's see here. Someone asked me if I've listened to Bill Roach's talk on Christian nationalism. I didn't know it was out. Bill actually had privately texted me and said he would send it to me. So this is the first time hearing. I did not know that. He hasn't texted me, so I now I know. I am looking forward to hopefully listening to that at some point. I did see, I think this was maybe what, a month or two ago, Bill had put out something, and most of you probably don't know who this is. He has been on the podcast before though, and you know, as far as I know, we're friends. I think we're friends, but Bill and I have known each other for a few years now. He was a professor at Southeastern in philosophy. An adjunct professor at one time. And so, and because I went to Southeastern, we had a commonality there, and we were both opposed to the social justice stuff that was happening there. And Bill had posted something, if memory serves me correctly, this was maybe 2 months ago, on saying that there was a Hegelian element to Christian nationalism, which, you know, it's postmodern, it's Hegelian. There's all these things that are being kind of thrown out there. And I guess I have a natural skepticism a little bit when someone starts throwing those terms out there and they're not easily explained. And so I asked him to explain that. Like, I am open. I want to understand what you're saying. I mean, some books I've been reading have been showing that talking about how classical liberalism is actually Hegelian, or there's a Hegelian element to it. And of course, Marxism, Marx was certainly influenced by Hegel, but, you know, I don't know. Hegelianism is Hegelian philosophy is also broad. It's not like there's one thing. I mean, most of the time, I think when people say that, they're talking about the, you know, thesis, antithesis, synthesis, and the dialectic and stuff, but I didn't know exactly what he meant. So I asked him about it, and he said, hey, I'm going to be releasing this, and when I release it, I'll let you know. So that's the last I've heard about it, and I do look forward to it. But some people are saying that Hegel's based. Okay, maybe, you know, some of Hegel. I actually read a book on Hegel not long ago because I wanted to understand Hegel better. I mean, I took philosophy, so I had to understand him a little bit. But I read a book on him, and the book was actually making the argument in one section that some of the accusations Hegel gets for inspiring authoritarian regimes and so forth is actually not a correct reading of Hegel. And so So maybe we'll wade into that at some point. It's an interesting field, but it's easy to get lost in the weeds, I suppose. Let's see, other questions here. Craig Chambers, who has been on the podcast, says, "Good afternoon, brother. Saw the EFCA title joining in." Yeah, I'm going to briefly talk about it. It's not going to be very long. I'm going to briefly talk about the Evangelical Free Church. All right. Well, I think that's it for the questions. Oh, wait, there's one more. What is this? Okay. John, what's the nice profile pic, by the way? Das Vandiver. John, what's the balance between honoring the landmarks, i.e. authority figures and institutions, but also recognizing when they failed, i.e. Jenna Ellis's continual appeal to the Constitution? Yeah, that's a big question. I guess I would say that landmarks, I'm assuming you just mean kind of like hierarchy. So authority structures that were once in place, that we once trusted, that once had some authority, and some of them still do, but we recognize that they've failed us and that we don't trust them anymore. I think, I don't know if there a balance is even the word. I mean, it's again, I like to break things down to a smaller level, to make them more understandable. So I think that let's put it in this context. Let's say you attend a church and there's someone, let's say there's a pastor there. We'll make it an authority figure who really does have legitimate authority over life. Jenna Ellis has no authority over my life, but let's say it's someone who actually does. And they've been preaching, you know, fairly solid. At least you respect them, let's say, you know, little disagreements, but for the most part, you know, you're in agreement. And you feel comfortable submitting to them. And then, you know, one day they start going off the deep end. They start saying things that, you know, aren't true. They become belligerent when you try to confront them about it or even ask questions about it. And then there's a pattern of that happening. And I think at that point, there's a natural thing that takes place. You lose respect. And once you lose respect for someone, it takes time to get that back. Right? It takes repentance. It takes a course correction that you can clearly see that this person is not off the deep end anymore. And so I have a hard time writing people off forever. I don't think we should ever really do that. But I do, I'll put it this way. I never really listened to Jenna Ellis's, I think she has a podcast. I never listened to that anyway. But if I did, and I did know who she was, at least I have for a few years, right now, I don't think I would be listening to it. If I had been. And it's just because it's not that you can't disagree with someone and still value their opinion. I'm not saying that, but it's more whatever basis for respect that had been there is kind of eroded at this point because of her online interactions. Some of you might not even know what I'm speaking of. I'm assuming the person who asked the question does, but she's been acting in ways that are just hard to make sense of. I'll put it that way. Wild accusations against people, even and friends of mine, to be quite honest. And I think I engaged with her once where she was taking aim at the idea of blasphemy laws, which, by the way, we already have. I mean, if you that's really in a way what a hate crime is. It's why you can't say certain words or there's certain symbols that if you desecrate them, there's a stiffer penalty. We have blasphemy laws. We have protected classes that shall not be disrespected in any way. And they have the legal force to prevent you from saying something that could be construed as disrespectful, right? So this is just the way it is. And I think that's probably an inescapable feature of any civil society. There's going to be a god of that society or something they worship that provides the rationale for the society to function. And once you attack that underlying rationale, you're attacking the basis for society itself, and it's destabilizing, and it promotes disrespect of the laws and that kind of thing. And so blasphemy laws were just part and parcel to the founding of the United States. They were just included in everywhere. I mean, it was ubiquitous. The founders of this country, and I'm speaking of those who framed the Constitution, I mean, they didn't really see a conflict existing between the local and state blue laws, blasphemy laws that they lived under, Sabbath breaking laws and the freedom of conscience that many of them held to, and the Bill of Rights and those kinds of things. They didn't see a conflict there, but today we do. And part of the reason, I think, is the classical liberalism I talked about at the beginning of this. It has just made, it has marched more progressively in an egalitarian direction. So, with that said, I think Jenna was going after, maybe it was Stephen or someone for, I think it was CJ Engel, actually. She was really viciously going after him, and he wants to replace, he wants to take, I think it was, have a civil war and replace the Constitution and all these things, which I don't think is true. But I just posted or retweeted it and put a picture of George Washington. And then George Washington's, there was actually twice in 1775 and 1776, George Washington ordered his army, and there was punishments involved if they did not heed this order, to not blaspheme and to also attend church services. And so I just asked whether or not, George Washington was a tyrant, because she was calling, I guess it was CJ Engel, a tyrant. So, I mean, I'm trying to ask questions. I'm sure, that's the only way I have of dealing with this, but I think that there's enough out there at this point to say, all right, let's find better leaders. If we're going to listen to commentary, and if we're going to follow it and put someone out there in the public sphere to represent us, then it's probably not going to be someone like that. We want someone who's going to be accurate and faithful to what they're analyzing, and has the correct, I guess, system of values and understanding to be able to evaluate those things. So that's a long-winded answer, I suppose. I could have probably said that in a shorter way, but hopefully that helps. I realize that means we have a vacuum right now, and I don't know what to say about that other than we need to pray. We need to just pray. There's so many, I tweeted out this morning, there are so many just leadership courses and leadership programs and degrees in leadership, and so few leaders. And it's a very sad thing to me. Okay, so I think that's it for questions for now. Let's get into some stuff. How's that? Let's get into some stuff. Where should we start? I guess we'll start with EFCA maybe, since, and by the way, if I didn't mention it, overcomingevilconference.com, if you're a last minute, you want to sign up last minute. EFCA and socialjustice.wordpress.com, EFCA and socialjustice.wordpress.com is the website. This is an article, and it's very long. I'm not going to read this whole thing, but I was tipped off to this because one of the pastors actually who writes for TruthScript is in the EFCA, or was, I should say, was in the EFCA. And he sent this to me, and he just like we had seen Pastor Cleaver recently being censored by the Evangelical Free Church for his anti-social justice views, now we see Pastor David Whitney also being censored. So his basically his ordination is being called into question, is my understanding of how this works. And it's on a different stand. It's because not social justice, but because of COVID stuff, which is probably why you saw a warning on this video, because that dreaded word is going to be in it. But he starts it off, the story sequentially of what happened to him, by saying back in November of 2020, my cluster in the EFCA East met by Zoom. I assume that means the cluster is probably a group of pastors in that region. He said, during the session, each pastor was asked how his church was doing during the pandemic. I replied that we had not shut down in-person worship during this time. And he gave his reasons for that. My statements, he said, seems to upset and anger several pastors in our cluster. I didn't know it at the time, but three pastors began investigating my sermons and demanding a meeting just before Christmas. The timing did not work for me, so we ultimately met on Zoom. Prior to the meeting, I asked one of the pastors, Guy Kneebone, for a list of questions they would be asking so he could prepare. He never got a list. Pastor Kneebone, I'm hoping I'm saying the names right, Keynes and Rydell, we have talked about him. He is very woke from the clips that we've seen. He interrogated me for 2.5 hours, and they were very aggressive in their attacks on many things, which I said in the sermon. they had listened to. Pastor Keynes said that he would be horrified if anyone in his congregation ever listened to any of my sermons. Pastor Kneebone spoke of how they were spending a great deal of time and effort studying and learning from critical race theory. He and others started, and they believe I was a Christian nationalist and that such a stance was unacceptable in the EFCA. I'll just take a quick break here. One thing you have to understand, and I need to emphasize this point more and more, is that that term Christian nationalism that is being condemned so strongly by members of evangelical organizations is, yes, it's being appropriated by certain people for Protestant, Reformed political thinking, paleoconservative ends, theonomic ends. It depends on the person who's appropriating it. But that is a catch-all term that people in the world just throw at any Christian who thinks that they should be vocal about their faith in public. I mean, that pretty much makes you a Christian nationalist in the minds of those people. So I think it's just, you know, and here you see it being parroted by, unfortunately, evangelical leaders. Needless to say, I was astonished beyond measure. I could not even conceive of fellow EFCA pastors doing this to another EFC pastor. So he was, and I think this, a lot of pastors are like this, just kind of hit upside the head. And this is a pastor who, my understanding, has been an EFCA pastor for something like 40 years. So this is someone who's been there for decades. And some of these guys are young, younger than him, I'm sure. And which is, you know, it's not like they don't have legitimacy because they're young, but you would think that there would be a respect and a seniority, that they wouldn't be aggressively going after someone like this in the first meeting. Fast forward to September 2022, John Nesbitt of the EFCA East contacted me regarding the necessity of meeting with him and Paulo Freire, Freire, I'm not sure how you say his name, regarding my credentialing in advance of the BOMS meeting a few days later. He apologized for so short a notice for the meeting, admitted that he had put off this meeting, which he knew needed to be done. I cleared my schedule to be able to meet the time crunch that they were under. I asked him for a list of questions that I would be asked in this meeting. He gave me the generalities. So he goes on and he said, Paulo did not provide any questions, though in the meeting, he read from a list of 11 questions he had regarding Christian nationalism. It would have met the biblical standards of justice to have given me these 11 questions in advance, as he clearly had a list he was reading from. In this Zoom meeting on September 13th, John said that the district office had received complaints about Cornerstone, that's the church he pastors, regarding its adherence to the church constitution. I asked for the names of those who had made the complaints. Both John and Paulo refused to give those names, claiming it was not right to give me those names, and John was uncertain if it was two or three people and would not clarify if it was men or women, and stated he did not know if they were or were not members of Cornerstone. This refusal does not meet the biblical standards of justice. So procedurally, this whole thing is a mess. And this is a common story that I get from many pastors and just members and leaders in various denominations and Christian organizations, that this happens quite frequently, that even the rules sometimes agreed upon in their constitution are not followed. Now, he says that the accusations which John received, he said, were in the constitution. I suppose that means the constitution of the EFCA, if I'm not mistaken. The specifics of those allegations, I only know from the issues John raised regarding having one elder at this point in time and not holding a congregational meeting in 2021. There are other accusations. I have not been made aware of them. So he's saying, you know, as far as he knows, I suppose there's only one accusation or two, I suppose. Okay. So as to the second accusation, our constitution does not require that there be multiple elders. It provides a process by which elders can be sought and nominated. Let's see here. Okay. Okay, Paulo launched into his questions about Christian nationalism, asked if he could give me a definition of the term. Okay, so he goes into the specifics of this. Paulo said my answers indicated I was a Christian nationalist. So they have this list of, you know, what makes you a Christian nationalist, probably like a Paul Miller thing or something. And then they apply that and say, well, this makes you a Christian nationalist. And that's a bad thing. That's a boogeyman. You know, you're a bad guy. And this all started from the looks of things with his refusal to shut down the church during COVID. So that put him on the list, that put him on the notice. John sent a list of documents he required to further answer the accusations against me. Let's see. Again, he's not revealing some of the accusers. I'm going to skip ahead here because this is very long. If you want to see more of it, you can go to EFCA and socialjusticeword.wordpress.com if you're in the EFCA. And I would recommend if you're in the EFCA, read this whole thing. At least if you are somewhat involved in the EFCA, I think that's important. Anyways, this gets brought up. I'm trying to find the exact section here. He has thorough detail, which is good. You need thorough detail in situations like this because, and recording things probably is also a plus in situations like this. But this has gone to the national board. So this is past the EFCA East and now, the national board. And, the claim here, this is very similar to the SBC's problem. The claim here is that in bringing this to the national board, this is inverting the structure to form something more akin to the Episcopal denomination and not a congregational polity. So you have now a national board getting involved in this more local matter, but they are, I think the EFCA is similar to the SBC in that they believe in the autonomy of the local church. So you have the national board now essentially putting on notice a pastor and threatening to remove his ordination because of this issue that started with not shutting his church down during COVID. And so he responds, he is taking a stand. He says, there is only one issue of not fulfilling our church's constitution. So it was the church's constitution. I was wrong, not the constitution of the EFCA, but the church's constitution. And that is that we were not able to hold a congregational meeting in 2021 due to the inability to obtain a quorum during the pandemic. This is a time when the large number of churches had closed themselves to any and all in-person worship. The broad brush smear that we are not in compliance is not accurate. So the accusation is that they violated their own constitution by, I suppose, shutting down. And the interesting thing about all of this is that this is a local church constitution and you have a national board now trying to impose, but trying to apply the rules of the local fellowship and police them. Now, he says to suspend or otherwise remove my ordination would be a further violate the biblical standards of justice. So he is bringing it back to the Bible at every turn in this whole thing. The charges, again, here is what Greg Strand sent as the charges. You willingly and knowingly failed to comply by providing the necessary information for the EFCA East District to determine whether the leadership of the Cornerstone EFC is following the church constitution and bylaws as accused. It's a little bit technical there, but that's the gist of it. So I'm not going to spend more time on it, but if people have questions about that, I would just suggest going to the website. Let's see if anyone's weighing in on this. Who knows more? Craig Chambers says the real issue is the EFCA has bent left and conservative pastors are being dealt with falsely. And that's what I, and so, and Treadle says, sounds like Ryan Turnipseed again, who's in the EFCA. I'm sorry, not the EFCA, in the Missouri Synod, Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. So this is something that's happening cross-denominationally. The guns are only pointed in one direction, right? You have actual heretics, actual false teachers, actual problems, but they're not being addressed. Instead, the guns are pointed at the more conservative members, conservative pastors, conservative churches. And this, of course, reflects the opinions of those who are in control in these denominations. They are managerial elites who have an allegiance to the liberal order, not to the oaths that they've taken or did, I'm going to just say it, or to Jesus Christ, or to primarily, or to the members of their churches and the pastors that they assist and so forth. So this is the problem that's going on, and there aren't easy solutions for it, because you need men of character to be able to fill those roles. And the question is, do those men of character exist? And if they do, and I believe they do, I have to sit to think that there are men of character out there. There may be less of them, but I think they are out there. But are they then disqualified at early stages from climbing those ladders to get into those positions? That's another problem, and a major one. So what's the solution to that? It's going to be dependent on where you are. But on a macro level, I mean, there isn't much of a solution, I think, for churches that have just gone this direction. I mean, I think the goose is cooked, so to speak. I mean, you could try what they're doing in the SBC, which is, you know, let's rally every year. Let's try to get a bigger group to come out. Let's outvote. But it hasn't been very successful so far. And I don't have any faith that it will be, to be quite honest with you. There's small successes you could point to, perhaps, but they're not going to be enough to turn the whole denomination around, which is what you need. All right, well, let's talk about the SBC here. on that depressing note, right? You could always start new organizations, right? But there's no structure that's going to foolproof prevent this kind of corruption from happening. Men of character, you need virtue. You need virtue. So train virtuous men, lead virtue, follow the lead of virtuous men. There's not a whole lot of them. All right. So Bart Barber, the president of the Southern Baptist Convention, this is in the Biblical Recorder. He has appointed members to a cooperation group. Here's the story. Addressing things we have never done before in the history of the Southern Baptist Convention will permeate discussions of those who will present a report next June that could reassert or redefine what constitutes a church to be in friendly cooperation with the SBC. These declarations that churches are not in friendly cooperation and these appeals in response to those declarations represent a change in the fundamental processes by which we cooperate with one another, he said, Bart Barber. The 20-member cooperation group came about from a motion in 2023 that in New Orleans that placed the group's formation in Bart Barber's hands. Jared Wellum, pastor of Tate Springs Baptist Church in Arlington, Texas, will serve as the chair. Other members include, and it goes through a list. And I recognize some of these names, others I don't. Of course, Jonathan Lehman is there. You have Juan Sanchez there. Who the funny thing is that Jonathan Lehman and Juan Sanchez are like the conservatives in this group, I'm pretty sure, which that, if that's true, that definitely gives you an indication as to how probably slanted left this group is. Trevin Wax, Gospel Coalition guys in this group. Richard Land, that's interesting. Richard Land is in this group. Donna Gaines, okay, the wife of Steve Gaines, who he's kind of woke. Yeah, I'm willing to say that. So this is the group that he's appointed. It's people that Bart Barber thinks are good for this particular role. And if you remember, the whole issue was it was sparked by the law amendment, the Mike Law Amendment, to basically say that churches that are not in friendly cooperation with the Southern Baptist Convention, I'm sorry, I'm not showing you guys the article. Hold on. Here's the article. There you go. Biblical Recorder. That if a church has a woman pastor or women pastors, they are not in friendly cooperation, because that contradicts Baptist faith and message. And there have already been, there's a precedent for this. They've already specifically identified abuse and racism as two things that churches can be kicked out of the denomination for, and that's already taken place or disfellowshipped with. And so now let's just add something that should be obvious to Southern Baptists. Well, now there's a problem, right? And you had a bunch of the former presidents of the Southern Baptist Convention going to the mics at the annual meeting and saying that we need to really study this issue of cooperation and what constitutes cooperation. And so what this does effectively, I said this at the time, was that J.D. Greer is going to get you to the same position I think Rick Warren gets you to in so many steps. It won't be the one step that Rick Warren wanted to take. Rick Warren rushed it. Rick Warren thought the SBC was probably more progressive than it actually is, and he rushed it. But J.D. Greer understands it better. And what he proposed, and others along with him, was that there should be a study committee formed to look at these things. And what can effectively happen is that study committee can actually come up with something that will make the law amendment obsolete. So even if a law amendment's passed and it's confirmed at the next annual meeting, this other thing that's going on, this study group, can make suggestions to the Southern Baptists at the next meeting and change the way that cooperation is viewed, so that potentially even having female pastors doesn't put you at odds with the convention. That's how this kind of thing can work. So I want to show you, let's see who, well, let me play this video for you. This is one of the members of this cooperation group.
Move on, because I need to talk to something before I get out of the way. And we're gonna hear a message in a bit from Pastor Gary Smith, and I am so excited, as I know you are, my pastor and mentor, who was a pastor here for 25 years, bringing God's word. I've already heard it once, and I'm going to have to hear it again, because there's still work God's doing in me through it. It's going to be an incredible message as God speaks to you as we go through Exodus. But I want to tell you something that happened this past week. Pastor Gary and his wife Sandy and I were in New Orleans for the Southern Baptist Convention annual meeting with a team of people from the church, and there were just a couple things that happened that that concerned me. And I wanted to talk to you about so that you're aware of it. You're likely hearing some of this, those of you who are more tuned to the news. And the number one thing you're going to hear about that concerns me is the disfellowshipping, the removal of Saddleback Church in California from the Southern Baptist Convention, and because they have female pastors. And I want to just say publicly that I am in disagreement with that decision. I voted against that decision. We agree that this is not in the heart and tenor of the Southern Baptist Convention. You may not know much about the Southern Baptist Convention, but it's an incredible group of churches, over 47,000 churches that come together with one common mission: to take the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ to every place in this world, right here in this city, this country, and to the ends of the earth, planting churches, sending missionaries, doing gospel work. And the vast majority of the convention is thousands and thousands, literally millions of believers who love Jesus and want the vision of the gospel of Jesus Christ extended to the ends of the earth to happen. But there's also confusion. And I think that part of the beauty of the convention has been something called autonomy, that the churches don't exist for the convention, the convention exists for the churches. And the autonomy, being independent of the way that we operate, means that there can be a lot of diversity of opinion on minor issues, and we collaborate together and agree upon the major issues. The chief issue being our agreement to come under the word of God, the Bible as truth.
Okay, let me play for you. This is one more clip. And the person you hear speaking there is the lead pastor at Fielder Church in Arlington, Texas, Jason Paredes. Jason Paredes. And here's another shorter clip.
Amendment that was voted upon to the bylaws of the Constitution that says that any church that has female pastors of any kind would be considered no longer in friendly cooperation with the Southern Baptist Convention, which means after a while, it takes 2 years sequentially for that to be voted on, and if it's ratified, then churches that have female pastors would be removed from the Southern Baptist Convention, disfellowshipped. Fielder Church falls into that category. We unwaveringly, unequivocally, gratefully have female pastors in this church.
Okay, well, and they're clapping. There's an ovation for Pastor Paredes when he says that they have female pastors in the church. And so this is at least one member on this reconciliation committee. So it does raise a question about, this is someone who is in clear violation of the Southern Baptist Convention's own stated beliefs at this point, and I would say belligerently so. And yet, this is someone that needs to be given a seat at the table to come up with a solution for how Southern Baptists should interact with each other in a cooperative manner. And specifically, it's going to be on this question of female pastors. So we know exactly what he thinks. Now, he's not the only person on this committee. You know, I know someone like a Jonathan Lehman and a Juan Sanchez, which I said they're probably the more conservatives, which is funny to me, because I was critiquing them for at least Jonathan Lehman. Juan Sanchez, I know, has put some woke stuff out there. He's a Gospel Coalition guy. I'm not sure if I've talked about him on the podcast, but you know, they were the kind of guys that we were opposing, at least in our arguments, back in 2020 and you know, I guess 2018 through 2021, 2022, especially. And now they're on this issue, they're the conservatives. I'm sure of it. I'm sure they're going to be the more conservative ones on in a meeting like that. And it doesn't give me a lot of confidence. I'll put it that way. Hopefully they'll hold the line on this, but there's going to be some kind of a muddled middle solution probably, or some, I don't know, some kind of a compromise. That's my guess that they're going to try to reach. And it's going to be, like I said, J.D. Greer is going to get you there in multiple steps, whereas Rick Warren was going to take one. J.D. Greer can get you there in 10 years, you know, or maybe even 5 years. And Rick Warren, it would only have taken a year or two. That's just my opinion on it. So we've already been going about 45 minutes almost. I don't think I'll show you the Apple video unless people really, really want it. I'm going to go to the questions and see what people are saying. And if you have any questions, this is the time to get them in, and I'll weigh in on whatever you bring up. Scott Crawford said the vote wasn't close. Yeah, you're right about that. And that's one of the things people bring up to say, hey, look, SBC is not going to endorse women pastors. Look, most of the people voted against, or if they for the law amendment, right? And to that point, I say, you know, I think you're right as far as the sentiments on the floor, but the stage does control a lot. And we know over time, people change their opinions. At this point in the SBC, you know, the critical race theory fight's not even a fight. You know why? Because it's just assumed. And last year you saw that they had a resolution on, I believe it was immigration, that assumed some, I would say, critical race theory adjacent ideas. And there wasn't even hardly a resistance against it. It wasn't even on the agenda because there's bigger fish to fry now, that we've moved past that conversation. And so now we're in this new conversation about women pastors, and that's how things work. T. James Boone says, please don't show the Apple video. It's way too cringe. Yeah, it is pretty cringe. It's funny though. That's why I think it's funny, but it is cringy. Yes, you're right. Any other comments, questions? Let's see. Anita Smith says, the problem is they never give up until they wear down the people and they get their way. That's exactly the point I'm making. The next issue will be homosexual marriage, members, pastors. And it may be. Other denominations are certainly splitting over that. So, all right. Well, I appreciate everyone who joined the stream. Again, if you are planning on coming to the conference, you better sign up like now. OvercomingEvilConference.com. It starts next week. I'm looking forward to seeing you there. We got some great speakers, great lineup, great activities planned. I should be able to get you some podcasts next week. In fact, like I said, I likely will be dealing more with some of this G3 stuff. And you can pray for me, by the way, on that, because I want to do it in a gracious way, but also a firm way, and a way that does not compromise on the things that are true. And so I guess that's all I have to say about that. So that it's not the only thing we're going to be talking about next week, but we will have to address it, I think. And it's not fun. It's not something I want to do. I'll be honest with you, because my hope this whole entire time has been to try to work something out on that front. So anyway, God bless. Scott says, come to G3 with me, John. Yeah. Well, I literally that weekend's the men's conference, Scott. I can't, hopefully they would let me in. I would think. I heard that AD Robles got disinvited from G3. I don't know if that's true or not. I'll have to ask AD, but I saw some people saying that AD had said that he was disinvited from G3. So I don't know. But anyway, hope everyone is doing well out there. God bless, and more coming. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the Lord's Day. Bye now.